Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below. Picking apples on a biodynamic farm at age 12 led to setting up one of the largest biodynamic farms in Europe, almost 2,000 hectares in Poland, on very, very poor soils. Now consulting many large farm transitions, including the royal family, and working with Wildfarmed. Why is he so optimistic about biodynamic or holistic and regenerative farming, and why it all starts with children? This is the Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food podcast, Investing as if the planet mattered, where we talk to the pioneers in the regenerative food and agriculture space to learn more on how to put our money to work to regenerate soil, people, local communities, and ecosystems while making an appropriate and fair return. Why my focus on soil and regeneration? Because so many of the pressing issues we face today have their roots in how we treat our land and our sea, grow our food, what we eat, wear and consume. And it's time that we as investors, big and small, and consumers start paying much more attention to the dirt/soil underneath our feet. To make it easy for fans to support our work, we launched our membership community, and so many of you have joined us as a member. Thank you. If our work created value for you, and if you have the means, and only if you have the means, consider joining us. Find out more on gumroad.com/investinginregenag. That is gumroad.com/investinginregenag. Or find the link below. Welcome to another episode, today with large-scale organic farmer and advisor. Welcome, Sebastian.
Hi.
And to start with the personal, we already had a pre-chat, and I think there's so much to explore, which we're going to do. This is going to require a few rabbit holes I think we're going to fall into. First of all, a shout-out to Stijn of Boerschappen, who introduced us, and definitely was right when he said this is going to be an interesting conversation. But to start with a personal question, because I heard a bit about your backstory, but I think it's fascinating to share here with our audience. How did you end up focusing your career and most of your awake hours basically on soil?
Oh, that starts very early when I was 12 years old. I started to work on a biodynamic farm in Holland, in the Netherlands, because to make some money, and it was about 10 bucks a day for my surfing career, what I didn't follow up, but I'm still windsurfing. So there I got the enthusiasm for farming and soil.
And then, was it by accident that it was a biodynamic farm, or was that the nearest place to go to, or was it a deliberate choice?
I have no idea. I didn't make so much choices. I think it was like that. A friend of me, his father was working on an institute for handicapped people, and they have a little farm. And so we come in contact with them and start to pick apples and harvesting vegetables. And that was a biodynamic farm. So I have no idea.
And then you chose to actually go to farming school and not to continue windsurfing or anything else, a career in finance or lawyer, etc. Why?
No.
Many people, I think, have done the odd summer job on a farm somewhere, but then many choose not to go down that route. What made you choose or fall in love with farming?
I don't know. My family is more doctors or the medical and makler and such people. I don't know. I feel really well outside, to be outside, to work with nature, to work with animals. And somehow I never fit in the normal school system. So I make my high school and then I start studying agriculture. But I didn't take that so much. I was, most of the time, it was a lot of windows blowing and we was outside and not in the school. So I didn't fit in the system. Maybe that was a bit my problem or my luck. I have no idea.
And even though this was a biodynamic focused school, which is already was at the time and still is relatively outside, quote unquote, the system. And then what did you, How did you launch your career? What was the next step after agriculture school to get your hands on larger farms?
Yeah, I start with my work to manage the cow herd of a quite a big farm in Holland. This is from Piet van IJzendoorn, because he was breeding Angler cows. It was a special breed, and so I did it. I think maybe 1 year, something like that, and then we together decided it's better if I have my own entrepreneurship. Because I was always focusing on do it better and change the system, and he didn't want to change anything. I think it's still like it is for 28 years ago at his farm. But it was a lovely guy, a lovely period, and he have about 1,000 hectare of nature places where he cut grass and so. So I learned that bigger scale farming. And then I make a half year of learning processing milk, because I thought it was helpful to know that. It wasn't easy for a farmer to stand in a cheesery and with sunshine outside, but it was I did it. And I loved it somehow, because you can make so much beautiful products out of milk. Yeah, it's incredible. It's really incredible. And then I could rent a farm in Germany. So in Holland it was all
as one can. Yeah, how does that happen?
I make the practicum, what do you say, a praxis there on that farm, and then they called me and asked me if I don't want to rent it. So, and then I was 23 years old, a bit crazy. And it was also a bit of a sad story, because I have my best friend with whom I want to start that farm. We have an accident, a heavy car accident, on the day we want to sign the contract. And he gets handicapped. And I have nothing. And I continue, and he is now on the farm, not handicapped. It's very, not in a heavy way, but he is somehow not able to work alone. So that was a sad story at the beginning of the start of the farm. But it was cheap, so I didn't have high rent. And I have about 150 hectares. I could borrow cows of friends of me, and I said to them, okay, I give you back your cow if the first calf is adult. So it was a really slow start. But I made a lot of experience there. So there was one guy what starts a dairy, but he get bankrupt. So he almost took me with him in the deed. And then I have to start myself with cheesery and everything. So it was not an easy road, but I think it was a very important part of my life to do it all myself, to milk the cows for 7 years each day, to make cheese, to work on that quite a difficult climate with a difficult soil. And we made it somehow. But then I started my breeding project for long life fertility cows and on a natural base. So that means something like we want to have a very functional exterior, like in nature, for a cow would have to run like a horse. You have to be able to run like a horse, so it have to be really, really good in his body shape to produce milk without any problems. So, and that's quite a success. That are about 300 farmers where we help them to breed their own breed, yeah, to bring the power back to the farmer, and not to be depend on the breeding industry. And in 2005, I think it was 2004, 2005, Dr. Manfred Klett asked me if I don't want to go to Poland to support a project that just started, but it wasn't that successful. It was quite a mess. It is a 2,000 hectare farm. We bought it with the foundation, so the value of the soil is neutral. That's unsellable. The statutes say it has to be biodynamic or organic.
Anti-speculations, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And that was very important for me, because my experience was on that farm I rented.
I was going to ask you, what happened to the rent?
The owner didn't want yeah, nobody wants to do invest in my farm. So the roof I was investing under it, but the roof wasn't that good that the water didn't come in. So that was my experience. And I said, okay, never ever I will rent a farm from a private person anymore. So the next step was have a foundation. The ownership it owns itself. Huh? So it owns itself. The whole entrepreneurship and social entrepreneurship belongs to itself. And that was the starting point. So I think it was quite a good starting point. But we have, of course, in Poland after the Second World War, then the Russian come. They drain us, all the water away, all the landscape elements away. They deported the people who was living there and bringing Ukrainians back there. So they rooted the people in the area. So you can imagine how it looks. Yeah,
it wasn't a happy place. Yeah.
There wasn't a happy place, and there wasn't a lot of humus in the people, and there wasn't a lot of humus in the soil, and there wasn't even a market for anything. So it was quite a difficult start. But we managed that. So we collected quite a lot of gift money and quite a lot of dotation to rebuild soil fertility on 2,000 hectares. Until now, it's the largest biodynamic farm of Europe. So no, I know, but maybe somebody is going over now. I hope so.
And like, how do you start then if you come to a place like that, even though you don't have the burden of huge, let's say, land payments or that, because that's like taken care of with the foundation, etc. But still, you have 2,000 hectares, very, let's say, hostile environment from a farming perspective, and very not very friendly environment because it's been extracted of everything basically on a social side. Like, where do you even begin with 10,000 problems to tackle?
I still remember that I was of course young, and I was driving there through this landscape in a Russian Jeep, in a very old Russian open Jeep, a red one, with on benzene, so it's smelling like hell, make a lot of noise. And I was driving through that beautiful landscape there, with that beautiful waving landscape, with that alley, you know, with the trees. And suddenly it was like it comes down. And I thought, yeah, that's my job. I have to do that. And I knew how to do it. I never know. I cannot explain you how it was, but I knew how to do it. And I thought, okay, before I have 150 hectares, so I have to cut the 2,000 hectares in 20 little pieces to understand what I have to do. So that was the starting point. And I invited one friend to assist me, to help me. And it's all about farming. So, and it's all about people. I think that's maybe the best thing I did, is say I really invite that employees to join the vision. So we had a really strong vision, and I worked with them. So the first 3-4 years, I was always with them outside, on the field, in the barns, in everywhere, to help them, to support them, to learn them, to teach them how to do the job, and to always talk about the importance of each person in that system. Yes, for example, I have a lot of stones around laying there, and so each year in the spring, people, 20 or 25 people, have to walk over all that fields to pick up the stones. And in the meeting in the morning, at 6:30 in the morning, I was talking with the guys and say, okay. And they say, yeah, but we are not that important. And we were sort of a little bit depressive. Maybe it was also most of the time the people who picked the stones was the easiest guys out of the village, of course. And I said, no. It's very important that you pick all the stones, because if you don't pick all the stones, on the harvester or the combine will be destroyed, and I have nothing to sell. So you are the most important person in the farming system at the moment. So always take them seriously. Take them with you on your road, and take you with you. That's with you on your journey. Explain what you want to do. Explain what you want to achieve in year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then you also have a lot of luck in such a beginning. Yeah, it's always some magic in the air if you start such entrepreneurships. Everybody say you are completely nuts and completely crazy. What are you doing here? And we didn't even have a house. We didn't even have, we rented a holiday house with two rooms and with one dog, three kids and a cat. So we didn't even live on the farm. But I was somehow, together with Manfred Klett, absolutely sure if we stay open and fair and open-hearted, it will somehow work out. And so, but of course, I underestimate everything. I think that was the best thing I could do. Underestimate everything. It was very naive. I was 29 years old, so I was quite young. I didn't even speak Polish. So I always have somehow something in my pocket to draw on the wall how we do it. Yeah. So we somehow maybe I managed to reach the heart of the people. And it's in Poland like that, if you read the people by heart, they do everything for you.
And like just to paint a picture, like now, like how different is that farm, like the 2000 hectares compared to the neighboring farms or compared to the neighboring landscape? This is an audio medium, so that's tricky, but let's make it as visual as possible. What do you see? Because you go back a few times a year, but what do you feel, see, smell, hear in terms of difference between when you get there compared to maybe before, maybe the neighboring plots or the neighboring area?
Yeah, absolutely. Totally proud on that place. First thing, I'm totally proud. And if I come there, we all fall each other in the arms and start crying. So it's really a really emotional thing almost. Eh? So there's a really a hard connection to the people. That's beautiful because I saw the difference between 2004-05 and now. So the people are more happy. They have a perspective. They don't have to go to Germany to work there and lost the contact to the family and so on. So they can stay on the place and invest in their own home. It wasn't exactly in 2004, the people thought they have to give back their home to the Germans if they go to the EU. Can you imagine? Yeah? So they didn't invest anything in their houses because they was afraid, okay, I have to give it back. So if they feel that they don't have to give it back and then they have a financial perspective out of the work they do on our project, they start to renew the windows and the roofs, and so the village start to get alive. So that's the first thing. So the villages are more alive as before. The second is that, you, of course, if you drive into the farm, and also people without knowledge about agriculture, they feel somehow, here's something different. And what it is, I cannot really say that, but I think it somehow have to do with the atmosphere. But also, of course, visible because you see the landscape is changed. Yeah? There is more diversity in the landscape in sense of cropping. So it's a 9 years crop rotation. So with a lot of legumes in it, and always somewhere in the farm the whole year round is something flowering for the insects. And we plant about, I don't know how much, trees and hedges and building lakes. And in dry landscape, we build lakes, incredible lakes, yeah. To get more moisture into the landscape, to get more cooling in the landscape in the summertime, so you have, there's a lot of wildlife going on. Now there are more birds, more, yeah. So it is, and in a neighborhood, I don't want to be unfair to them, but they make somehow a crop rotation, maybe 2-3 crops. They don't invest in composting, so there are not so much insects and not so much birds. There are no cows running around, so the cows brings a lot of life into the landscape, also if they are grazing. There, of course, beautiful buildings we built. One of the principles I had, we will build buildings what everybody likes to make photos of. So everything is with wood and everything have a good color, is in a good shape into the landscape. So we built, of course, a lot of holes and a lot of barns and everything. We built everything ourselves. So we have I grounded the own building company because it can save a lot of cost, and I love to build and to draw. So we have 15 people and a carpenter. at the end, we have a completely company. What now works for himself? It's a Genossenschaft, so it's an association of themselves. So they're working now in their own company. That 15 people, what I took from the street. So, yeah, I think that's the difference. There's somehow happiness.
And then, after such a high, let's say, you decide to move back to Germany. I mean, you're from the Netherlands originally, but you were in Germany before. And then what? Or like, what do you do after such an achievement? But also, for sure, time-wise, like wasn't an easy journey. It was definitely a marathon. Like, what do you decide to do next?
Naja, I didn't take. Of course, Yugowo was first of building soil fertility and then building on all the society, because I think the base of the society should be an organic approach to have a healthy society. And at the moment we have a problem that we have a big head on a small base, and that's also one of the problems. People lost their connection to soil and earth, and maybe also to their selves. Yeah, I have no plan. So I bought here an old rectory on Rügen for a little money, completely destroyed, and rebuilt that. So it was somehow my project. It's about 560 square meter big house. It's incredible big. And we are living here now with two kids instead of five. So together we have five kids. And that was the first thing I started to do. And then people start calling me and say, hey, do you don't have time? I heard you are not in Yugowo anymore. Do you have, so a few people wants me to farm their farms, but, the one in Italy, a few in Germany. But I thought that was not the right thing to do. So I wanted to do something else. And good friends of me said to me, make some consultancy, because then you can share your experience. That was not my words, but that was their words. Share your experience more to more people, to help more people to go in a transmission, in a change process. So that was what I started doing. So I have a little company and have an advisory role. And last 2003, so 2018 till 2022 summer, I run a farm for a friend of me, about 800 hectares. So always we are in going back to a management role or an interim entrepreneurship role to run a business. And so I was asked from the royal family to help them in some of their projects. Yeah, so
and always,
that's what happened.
Always organic, always biodynamic. That's been your focus.
Yes.
Transition, or what kind of typical when you said 800 hectares here, 1,000 hectares there? Like, what are the questions you get in an interim, or what kind of transitions do you get thrown at?
Yeah, it's always starting with the soil. Some people. So I also worked a lot with the Hip Group, with Stefan Hip. It's also a very good friend of me. The baby food brand. Yes, exactly. And it's always about soil. Huh? So if you, for example, have a farm, you have a company like Hip, they need the best food for the babies in the glass. So, and that all starts with the soil. So if the soil is not balanced, and that's most of the time after a conventional farming system, then you first have to get that right again. And it is not about, okay, we start with compost, but it will not work, because if the body is have not the right pH and there are not the right microelements and there's no oxygen in the soil, like in a body, like in, you know, if you go to the hospital and you have an accident, they take blood of you and look in the blood, what's going on there, how is the body, in which shape it is. And that's the first thing you should do. And then you start with rooting the soil or subsoiling the soil to get your soil compaction away. And the last step is starting with compost, and compost is an extract and everything. So, and sometimes it's like that people start but compost, and are completely disappointed that it doesn't work out. And then they call me.
Which is what happened to you in Poland, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that I suffered myself. Exactly. So in Poland, I started with compost, and then I didn't have any effects. Maybe a bit, but not that what I expected. It was crazy expensive to do it. And then I get a book from Zeb Holzer. I think everybody knows him. Great guy.
Everybody should, but let's assume book that they don't. I'll put a link below in the
You don't know Zeb Holzer. Oh, you have to.
I know, but I think everybody should. Cool. So I will put a link below in the show notes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So and it was fun. I get that book from von Carl Ludwig Schweisfurt from the Schweisfurt Stiftung. He was visiting me, and he saw what I was doing, and then he sent me a book. And he sends me each year's books about everything. This was beautiful. And then I thought, yes, that's what I have to do. And then I start to look on all the tales I have in my landscape. Can I make water places here? Can I make retention places here? And then, of course, everybody say, okay, now the Dutch get completely nuts. He starts to build dams in dry landscape. But it works. And because I said we have 2,000 hectares and 600 millimeters of rain a year, so that's quite a bit of milk, quite a bit of water, what I only have to catch. But it was in the wintertime and not in the summertime. And in the summertime, we almost have no rain. So that was, of course, the next step. And then I start to plant hedges to break the wind, because we have so much wind that you have sandstorms on some fields. And in the wintertime, it sometimes was 30 degrees minus, and everybody was frozen to death. So I have to make the microclimate to harvest on the rest. So I decided to build a landscape network on 20% of my soil to harvest on 80% of my soil. So I give back a lot to nature, but not in one corner of the farm like a rewilding project. They have nothing against that. But I say, okay, you have to build a landscape network, and in this healthy landscape network, there will be growing healthy food. And that works. So that was a crazy, incredible experience. And I was not alone, of course. I have a great team of people. Yeah, alone you are nothing in such projects. And
like now we're in like the beginning of 2024. I mean, you've been in the biodynamic movement for a long time. And now it seems like the regenerative agriculture under the big umbrella probably of agroecology is starting to flourish and starting to boom. Like what do you make of that compared to organic and the biodynamic space? What do you see in regen? What do you don't see in regen? What do we have to be cautious about or excited about? What excites you? So let's start with a specific one. What excites you in the regen hype that we're going through at the moment?
What I think I was asked if we were was successful in 100 years of biodynamic agriculture. And then I said, yes, we are totally successful. Totally successful, because now I am discussing with conventional farmers about holistic agriculture. They want to know, because they feel it necessary to do something. So what I'm totally enthusiastic that a few percent of people, a little group of people, were crazy enough to start organic or the biodynamic or the regenerate agriculture without any industry products. And it works. And it makes an example for a lot of people. It makes it possible that a lot of people get hope again. So I'm totally happy. In Juchowo, in Poland, 4,000 or 5,000 farmers a year are visiting there. How we do it. So we are a great example, and there are a lot of such culture islands in the world, what makes a great example for other people to do the same. So I'm totally hopeful.
And now when you like get requests, or like what are exciting ones, like a transition of 500 or 1,000 hectares, you've done quite a few, you've been working with quite a few, but what is like in terms of Is it a difficult like landscape, or maybe it's integrated into a food company, or it's extreme agroforest? Like, what is our exciting requests you get, and what are ones you're like, yeah, we've seen that, we've done that.
You mean in sense of what works and what don't work?
Yeah, but also what excites you now? Like, what makes you pick one over the other, A versus B, because you must get a lot of requests, and what are ones that are exciting, maybe super difficult terrains or super extreme weather? Like, what excites you in the ones you're working on now, and versus the ones you obviously said no to? So what are ones that caught your eye and said, okay, these are ones that I really need to step into, because you get a lot of requests and you can choose and you pick certain ones.
I'm totally enthusiastic, and I love Andy Cato,
friend of the show. Yeah,
it's such a great guy. So I Andy Cato is in London, and he have the initiative Wild Farmed, and he told his story on some meeting I have when I was working on Sandringham, And after his speech, I go to him and say, hey, I'm Sebastian, and I'm so happy you share your story, because I recognize you. Your story is the same like my story when I start my first farm in Germany. Yeah, a lot of suffering and a lot of difficulties, but it was totally great to see that it works. So, and then we start somehow a friendship, and are now in contact, and that is something I would love to support and work with. And I work with them now. And so there are different projects where I like to work with. And I think always
what
when
excites
there is
you about that specific one, because Wild Farmed is very specific, full disclosure. We're a small investor. They will be on the show coming. But they're friends of the show, let's say. But they're also very specific in going not necessarily certified organic, not necessarily going, let's say, all the way, etc. But very specific, Andy, is about getting as many grain farmers as quickly as possible on the first few steps of regeneration, and getting them off a lot of the chemical and fossil fuel-based inputs as soon as possible. And so what excites you in those transitions, like beginning of very conventional grain farmers to a very different system, compared to maybe somebody says, okay, I want my full estate or my full farm in Germany to go as deep biodynamic as he possibly can imagine. What draws you to Wild Farmed and the indicators of this world?
I think what I really like of that initiative is that they try to build a bridge between conventional and organic agriculture, and Andy is no farmer. Yeah, so he's a farmer from heart, but he was in a completely other business, and also Ed and also George, and they somehow make a mind shift in that direction, and they are totally realistic in the market, so they're really good in the market, so they try to build that association with the market so that they can pay the farmers the right price. So that's, I think, is a good idea. Especially that you don't let the conventional farmer lost or are only in contact with the industry, but you give them an alternative, you give them a way out of the system. And we have to be much, much quicker. So I love my farms, and I still love them, and I think it was really important to do it. And there are great examples in the world where people and neighbors can learn something. But I think we have to scale up. We have to be much, much faster. And what I don't like, maybe, and I think we will work on that, is that they cannot spray, so that's one thing. But they can use some fertilizer. But I'm sure if we make good compost and we make good crop rotations, and there I'm quite good in it, because I've never had manure in Poland. I have 0.2 livestock units a hectare, so that's nothing. Yeah, but we did it. Yeah? So you don't need so much cows, but you need a few cows, and you need your compost teas and your compost extracts and your compost, but you also need a good crop rotation and a bit of luck. And then you don't need any fertilizer. So I hope the true cost of fertilizer coming to the daylight. And it starts now to be because the energy price was rising because of a terrible war, of course. But that's something what maybe my hope is that the true cost come to the daylight. And it's not anyhow making economical sense to use synthetic fertilizer anymore. So, going in a direction and help them to do the transmission. But I will still always be, I'm an organic farmer. I will never do anything else. I know I don't need any industry at all. Yeah. Maybe only at the beginning of a farm to bringing the soil into life again, because I have to, you see, a conventional soil is like, it's like somebody would use a lot of drugs and eat a lot of sugar. Yeah. And I have to bring the soil away from the sugar and give them a bit more wild farm, good bread and bring in the microbes. And that is that you cannot do with only, let's say, homeopathic medicine. I don't believe in that. So we first have to really try to bring the micro elements in it, and we bring in the chark and the magnesium and the mangan and the molybdenum and all the elements you need to rebuild soil fertility, because it's an ill body. It's the same like somebody on intensive care. You cannot give him only homeopathic medicine. I think it's good to do it, but maybe also he or she needs something else. So that's the only thing where I need the industry. And afterwards, I don't need them at all. So it's not. So that's great. So it's the next. Let's say Bauernbefreiung, also freedom of the farmers. Yeah, so
farmers' freedom. Yeah,
it's the second time.
And what's holding that back? You said we're not going fast enough, or we need to go faster, and we need to scale. What do you think are the big blocks apart from the real price on fertilizer and many of the chemical industry products? What else is holding back the scaling?
Now, it's all about risks. I think one problem we have now, we are facing now, because all the money needs to invest, especially in times inflation is growing. So a lot of non-farmers are buying land, and they are not interested in living systems. Most of them, they are not very interested in living systems. So that's one problem. And the other problem is that people have fear for change. They are afraid to make a change, also if they know that the system they're doing now is not that optimum for earth, people, and healthiness, or also maybe not for the money side. But they go on like that. Farmers die really slowly because they have a lot of capital. So they will not buy a new tractor for 10 years, and then after 10 years they realize that the machinery don't work that well anymore, and then they start selling maybe a bit, but they're dying very slowly, so the process is not that well showed up. Of course, there's a lot of lobbying, I think, I don't know the word, against a transmission, because all the fossil industry and the chemical industry and the food industry and all, they want to have cheap, they want to sell as much as possible, and they want to have the food as cheap as possible to sell it for the highest price as possible after they process it in a bad way. And then the farmer industry in all parts of the, let's say, animal husbandry, but also afterwards if you eat the food, they have a good business model. So why they should change that? So there's a lot of money going on in the other side what don't like the change. Yeah? And maybe there's also changing now something. Yeah? There is more consciousness for... I have talks with Danone, with Nestle, with Allianz. They start to change their mind because
slowly,
they also have children.
They also have children.
So that's always good. So I think that's the difficulty. Yeah? So there's a lot of capital. So farming is a very, very expensive hobby. Yeah? So you need a lot of money to start a farm. And if you have all that money, take over. So if you don't are lucky like me that you can ground a foundation and get give money to buy it, then you have a high interest to pay each month. So, and then to make a transmission in such a situation is very difficult. And then of course, most the landowners are quite conservative in their thinking. So it's a lot about education. A lot about education.
And getting older.
Yeah, and getting older and whatever. So I don't want to blame somebody, but it is.
It's the reality. It's the reality of the space.
Yeah, there are a few owners I know, very rich owners I know, and they are great people, and they do everything to make a system change. So there are also a lot of good examples. And what we need a lot of good examples like acupuncturepunkten, also in the landscape, in the world, on Earth, to make a change. And Otto Scharmer says if we have 10% change willing people, nobody can stop us.
That's a tipping point, yeah. And then, so what would you say? I always like to use the example of, let's say we do this in real life. We're doing this in a theater. In Berlin or in London or in Amsterdam or somewhere, and or in Zurich, and we have an audience. Maybe in Zurich is a good example. Yeah. An audience full of finance people, like either investing their own wealth or are responsible for other people's wealth through pension funds, insurance companies, etc. What would be? I mean, they're excited about the evening. They've listened. They've learned a lot. But we also know that people walk out of those things and usually forget most of it the next day when they show up for work
like
again.
Like a good movie.
If we can plant one seed, what would you like them to remember from an evening with us on stage?
Good question. Sometimes I ask I make quite a lot of speeches, and I always ask him, okay, everybody with children in the room, please stand up. You know, and why we are doing that, why we want to have a change in our agricultural system, why we want to save Earth. The best argument is the next generation. So that's the first tipping point, I think, that people, you have to touch them in the heart. I think that's always when they come in Yuhovo in the farm or the other farm, one of the farms, they always say, oh, here's something different. Here are the cows are somehow happy. Yeah. So you have to touch them by heart and then they start thinking. Yeah. You know, I think we think with our heart and we think with our stomach. And we also think a bit here, but we should go more downwards in that point of view. So I think, tell a beautiful story. I think it's very important. Tell them about. I think one really good idea is to tell them about the true cost of food. Tell them about all the costs that nobody pays, but the next generation or the now already we pay them. And tell them that it is an economical system that works. So we have maybe not the maximum profit, but you have a stable profit. And in times of climate change, we need a more resilient system in our farm. Because I am now a farmer for 28 years already, and I see the weather is changing. I see the weather extreme situations takes over. So if I have a healthy soil with a lot of earthworms in it, and I have my retention lakes, and I have hedges against wind, then my system is much more resilient against weather extreme situations. So it's also risk management. I think Allianz, I don't know, I'm not sure, I should ask other people for that, but I have no facts for that. But I know the Allianz don't like to give an insurance for credits if the farm would, let's say, grow the coffee in Colombia is not on that way. So people start to understand. Yeah. People start to understand that if you don't build any humus, you don't build any resilient systems in your farm, you are a bigger risk as before.
Yeah, and just for background, Allianz is one of the largest insurance companies in the world.
Yes, I think so.
Often the first. Yeah, I think so. Like either them or the reinsurance companies are the first that start to, they model everything. They look at all the trends because they will pick up the bill. That's very simple. Exactly. And we will then pick up the bill because we have to, our insurance fees go up. And if we would flip the conversation and say, what would you do if you would be an investor with, let's say, a large amount, €1 billion to put to work? I'm not looking for dollar amounts or exact euro amounts. I'm looking for, what would you focus on? Would it be buying land? Would it be freeing up land? Would it be technology or brands like Wild Farmed? Like, what would be your top priorities if you had to put that amount of money, which is a lot and nothing at the same time, to work?
Education.
For farmers, for a general audience, for children, what would be?
Starting with the children, starting by food, starting with cooking, starting to have each school should have an own garden, that the kids starts to build consciousness for soil, for a living organism. Because that's one of the problems I see, that the kids get more and more lost in a system, but maybe don't help them to grow in a normal, healthy way. So that's the first thing. And I think we need good universities what are not depend on, my dream is that all companies have to give 2 or 3 or 4% of their profits away in an anonymous way without name it for, independent university and school system and scientists. Yeah, because a lot of scientists are paid by the industry, so they do that what the industry wants to know. And if the results are another way, they disappear.
It's not being published.
So I think that's quite an important thing, because there's a brainwashing going on not all universities, of course. There are a lot of good ones, but somehow the industry tries to be involved in that system because they want to. Yeah, they want, of course, that the new customers buy their products. And then I would really free up land, I think, and make young farmers, young people give a possibility to start new models and help the researchers to, let's say, don't have a theoretical research project, but really on-farm research make like that. So the questions the farmers have in their situation they are working with to help them, to support them, and to documentate that. And looking on an, if you make an organic holistic approach, of course, there's always the problem that your costs are more high as you can... if you can cover. So there's one project what I really liked, and the one is from Patrick Holden, that's a good friend of me. It's the Global Farm Metrics. And there's another model going on in Germany at the moment that is from Christian, his another friend of me. He makes richtig rechnen. That means something like counting the right cost and counting the right products. So a farmer have, of course, if you working as an holistic organic farmer, you have a lot of common goods, producing a lot of common goods like biodiversity, climate, saving the climate, education, social aspects, and so on, and that you can value that somehow, and that's a product you could sell maybe. So make it visible what is the outcome, what are the true costs. So putting money in such systems to try to change the payment of the EU, for example, in not on a base of fields or the skills or hectares, but on the base of the outcome of a farm, and not only in form of products, but also in form of common goods. I think that could be a big change maker. And in England and already in the UK, you have the SFI, and the SFI is a new program. I discussed it with somebody in London. There also was implanted that in a way, and that pays already a lot of that common goods So if I make my business model for my farm in England, and then look, okay, where I can get dotation for that, it was a lot was covered with it. So that's I think the politic, we have to work with the politicians to change their mind, to help them to be strong enough to against lobby. Yeah, I think, and then I think the billion is gone. I'm not sure.
Probably.
Helping young people to start some things, little initiative, it doesn't matter. It just really doesn't matter. And for me, always one of my motivation to do this job are the children, the next generation. We have to do something.
And what if you could? So we are no longer in charge of the fund, the investment fund to put to work, but you are you have some magic power where you can change one thing, but only one thing overnight. What would you do?
What I would do? One magic thing. I think I would, maybe it's all about land ownership. There's a little book of Indians and I get it as a present, and the question is on the book is, how can you own air? And I think it would be beautiful if the world is like that, that we cannot own life. We cannot own life forces. We cannot own land. So the land is a common good. Air is a common good. Water is a common good. And I'm at the moment afraid that the next war will be not about oil. The next war will be about water and food. And that's all about all the money power, what's dictating us a system. So maybe if I can wish that, then it was, I think that will be my biggest wish. Yeah. Like, of course, our little wishes, like.
No, it is a big one. It's a big one.
Quite a big one.
That's why we asked the question.
It's a game changer, I think.
Yeah. That's exactly why we ask that specific, because there are a lot of, but we've heard many different things, like from true cost accounting to all animals outside in their natural habitat to policy changes, subsidies to all people able to taste quality difference based on agriculture. Like all of that, like we've had very big ones, slightly smaller ones, depending on the person, obviously. And I think it's a perfect way to end this conversation for now. I don't think it's the last time we talk, and I want to thank you so much for coming on here and share on a Friday late in the evening or late at during the day, and I want to let you go back to your family and dinner. So thank you so much for coming here, for the work you do, for the journey, and for coming here to share that with us.
Yeah, and thank you for the time, for your time.
Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. For the show notes and links we discussed in this episode, check out our website, investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/posts. If you like this episode, why not share it with a friend or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts? That really helps. Thanks again, and see you next time.